Hello and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my co-host, my friend Parker Fleming. Parker, it's Victory Sunday night, baby. TCU beat SMU.
TCU did beat SMU. TCU with a win goes to 3-0 for the first time, and it feels like forever, Grant. And yeah. I think, look, here's where I'm sitting at the very top of this. Before we dive into anything, TCU could have lost that game so many ways. Just the game that played on the field yesterday, holy cow, and they didn't. I'm elated about that.
You know what? Let's get right into this. Like, we talked about this beforehand. This is a game that last year TCU would have lost.
I think so.
They displayed it several times. Winnable games that they just simply chose not to convert into wins. This time around, it wasn't always pretty. Candidly, I left for a wedding reception after DeMarcado scored to make it, 42-27. I thought it was in the bag. Turns out it wasn't, so I watched the game on the way. They won that game. They were the dominant team. I know you have your graph where it shows how badly the Duke get beat, and it was a pretty close game, but it always felt like TCU was in control and just had to stop it from slipping away. And it wasn't pretty, but they did so. I'm happy with it.
Yeah, that, absolutely. I think that they jumped out to a big lead, and that was the thing we had talked about the last couple of years, is that TCU let SMU jump out to a big lead. Grant, we'll get into the nitty-gritty. I'm not going to go play-by-play here or anything. But that very first play that SMU ran this year,
yes,
they ran across to Rashi Rice. They ran Y cross, hitting Rashi Rice. That was 100% exactly the same play that SMU ran last year with Danny Gray and got a 68-yard touchdown off the very run. Rhett Lashley knew what he was doing. They ran it. They tested it. They wanted that big play. TCU denied it. And they got ahead, and then they were able to say, all right, whatever nonsense at halftime you have, all the stops you can pull out, we're ahead. We can take care of this. And at no point in time did the game feel like it was in doubt. The game felt like, oh man, this team might have some bigger problems, but I'm not worried about those right now. At no point was TCU in danger of losing that game. I think they really just did exactly what they needed to at every minute to come back from some issues and say, hey, we're just going to keep this at arm's length.
Yeah, and you wonder, too, would the play calling be different? And I really don't have too many gripes about the play calling, at least on offense, for the majority of that game. Would it have been different had the game been in the balance? Would the TCU have been more aggressive in the second half? They would have kept the hammer down a little bit. But I come away from that game very blustery, very, very confident. Not necessarily that TCU is going to challenge for a Big 12 title, but that this is a different TCU team than what it was last year. It's a more fun TCU team. It is a team with more power, maybe, to surprise a couple of good squads in the Big 12 and to really just be competitive, dadgummit, in some games that it needs to be competitive in. I was very, very enthused by that first half, and I'm willing to forgive a little bit of the slippage in the second.
Yeah, so first half, Grant, five meaningful drives. They had a downs at the end of it where it was just kind of running out the clock there.
That sucked. I will say that.
I do think they tried to go for it and they couldn't. They didn't do it. So I do think that I think I tweeted into the group chat, litmus test, will Sonny score?
Yeah.
And I wish they had. I think there was just a couple of mistakes and then a penalty, and we'll talk about penalties later.
But, yes, we will.
Five meaningful drives, a six kind of garbage time drive there. And Grant, five plays, touchdown. Nine plays, touchdown. Four plays, touchdown. One play, touchdown. Just explosive, efficient, exactly what we wanted to see coming out of the gates. If you're buying into the vision of Sonny Dykes, you're buying into the vision of a ruthlessly efficient offense. And in the first half, looked every bit of that, absolutely. So, I mean, just thrilled with how the first half went, thrilled with the TCU jumping out to a 14-0 start. I mean, just absolutely excellent. Props to you for grinding the film and saying, hey, Tanner Mordecai looks a little weird, dude. Two interceptions that really, I mean, if TCU doesn't force those, we're looking at a different ballgame.
Mordecai made some good throws. I think it was maybe early on in the third quarter, but he had a really great throw on sort of a long out route or a really long corner that I thought was just phenomenal. He dropped it in a bucket. But for the most part, it was throw it to Rashi Rice and hope he makes a play or the refs throw a flag, which most of the time it turned out to be the latter. We won that game, so I'm not going to complain about the refs too much, but good God almighty, that was really, really tough to watch. I would have liked TCU's defense to pressure Mordecai more. We can get into all that. I don't know. I big picture, I'm happy. I mean, that's exactly what I wanted. Parker, we cannot ignore the absolute dismay that ESPN had when the SMU fans did not show up for like the first quarter of that game.
Yeah, so I will say I'm inferring a lot of this because the best way to watch a broadcast is to put country music on in the background and press mute.
That's what I do, yeah.
And so I didn't have the audio on for all of this, but I did hear some nonsense about – I almost tweeted this out, and then I thought, you know what, I'm just not going to put fan BS out there, but I felt it in my heart. I'm like, I'm not sure a G5 coach who left to took an obviously better P5 job – has gotten more flack than Sonny Dykes has. Like, legitimately, from that ESPN broadcast, they were like, messy breakup was a phrase. He turned his back on his team is another phrase they said. I was like, dude, no one said that about Scott Frost. Like, Scott Frost got a homecoming reception and all this nonsense for, you know, for leaving his team absolutely in the lurch in the middle of the night. Like, Brian Kelly, no one, saying stuff about that. It's like, Sonny Dykes didn't do wrong by anyone. Sonny Dykes worked hard and got a good offer at a place he had worked before and a job he wanted and got it. And ESPN was just absolutely buying into the SMU narrative about Sonny Dykes being a traitor and doing all that stuff. That was just really annoying.
Go read the Ross Dellinger article if you have. Dude, I know you have.
Sonny Dykes, this is a report. Okay, sometimes I say things and I'm like, this is not inside baseball. It's not reporting. Sonny Dykes asked for a number. And SMU was like, dude, no effing way we're spending that on football. And he said, okay. Like, yeah. And then the Dellinger piece mentions that, where Sonny said they didn't, you know, they had a laissez-faire attitude. I will tell you, I know about as well as anyone. There was a number that was asked for, and SMU said no, and he left. Like, that's not a messy breakup. That's not him doing anything wrong. That's him saying, hey, if you want to invest in this, the dude, this video went around this weekend, the dude did a promo video at SMU where he, like, baked and cooked and ate frog legs. Yeah. Like, he was in. That's fine. And they said, we're not going to commit to you. And he said, you don't have the tools that it takes to win. I'm going somewhere that's going to invest in me.
Massive amounts of copium coming out of Dallas. I did not think they could be surpassed until Texas lost to Texas Tech, which we will get to. But I'm just very, very glad that TCU won this game. As you said, starting this season, it was a very good idea for Sonny Dykes to win this game.
Yeah.
For a litany of reasons. And they did. I'm perfectly happy. No notes. Let's beat Oklahoma.
This is the first threshold that TCU needed to cross under Sonny Dykes, which was let's get this bug off our back. That's absolutely fine. Grant, offense or defense? Your call.
Oh, I have more complaints about the defense, so let's save that for the end. Let's do offense.
Yeah, that's good. Let's get on a good thing. Although I do have some second half complaints about the offense. Sure. So let's dive in. Grant, I'm saying this on air as well as texting you. I want to make sure that we're doing, you know, the first principles. Let's look at some grades. Mm-hmm. Let's look at some units. I want to start with the offensive line. Is that okay? Is that fair?
Yeah,
maybe that's a little negative. Maybe we'll get positive.
No, it's okay.
Max Duggan was only pressured on 22.9% of his dropbacks, but on eight pressures overall, five of those were sacks. His time to throw on those was 3.2. So offensive line wasn't holding your blocks very long, but also Max, buddy, I love you. I believe the phrase, Grant, in technical terms, earmuffs everyone is shit or get off the pot.
Well, and that's the thing too, is he's such a talented runner. And it almost makes me think, look, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know what goes on inside his head, but I wonder if it's like, hey, I'm given more freedom to make some big passes downfield. I'm going to see if those routes develop and maybe hold on to the ball a little bit longer than I normally do instead of tucking and running, which he's extremely good at. But yeah, there are times where it's like, dude, get rid of the ball, get 5 yards, do whatever you got to do. He really only had one scramble that was significant. And of course, it picked up a first down because he's good at it. Yeah, I mean, of the five sacks, I'd say 2.5 were the line's fault and 2.5 were Max's.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So a pretty even split along the offensive line. Brandon Coleman played the whole game at left tackle. Steve played the whole game at left guard. Alana Lee looked like he was hurt. He only played 58 total. I think he came back in, though, so yeah, I don't think he was long time hurt. And then Andrew Coker, 52 snaps. John Lance, 37 at right guard. Wes Harris at right guard. At right tackle, Michael Nichols played some snaps, maybe to – spell what was going on with Coker, and let me tell you, that didn't go much better.
We got to talk about 74, man. We got to talk about
Coker. Then we have to start here, and I hate dogging an individual player. And I will say that the biggest thing that we have said over and over is there's a reason that he's not TCU's left tackle right now.
Look,
he had a 47.0 pass block grade, according to PFF. All four other linemen, 89, 87, 78, 85, and then Coker, 47.
Yeah, and like it's not like he shines in run blocking either. And also, he had two penalties. Might have been both false starts. So if it's holding, it's okay, maybe you're trying to make a play and hope the ref doesn't notice. Right, but false starts is, hey man, you have been in this offense for, what, 3 years, 4 years now? Not the same offense, but certainly you have experience, and you still can't manage a snap count. At this point, it's debilitating. One of those, I think, was in that sequence at the end of the half where TCU was trying to score going in halftime, and he completely blew up a series.
So Max Duggan on 3rd and 15. So it goes a run on 1st and 10. And then they find then they try and drop back. He gets sacked for a loss of 8. 3rd and 15. Duggan finds Quentin Johnston. They run tempo. They line up. And Coker gets a false start. It's 1st and 15. We go incomplete sack because it's 3rd and 15. And then
punt. Yeah.
That incomplete on 4th and 24 shouldn't count. That was just they aren't punting. Yeah. They just got rid of the time. But yeah, really, really, really hard. TCU, I think, was the most in the Big 12 last year at facing 1st and more than 10 because there were so many penalties and it certainly looked really sloppy from Coker's standpoint at the right tackle there. I think the flip side of that is the rest of the line looked pretty dang good, and so it didn't really it didn't really bother them. So Alana Lee allowed one pressure, Coker allowed two, Wes Harris allowed two, 5-6, and then Michael Nichols allowed one. So two pressures were blitzes that were unblocked that just didn't get picked up.
Yeah.
And six pressures allowed, those were mostly Coker at the right tackle. The left side of the line between Coleman and Steve over there, experience looked really good. 89.2 grade for Brandon Coleman, 87.1 grade for Steve Avila. Steve also played 7 at snaps at center.
Yeah, and they also did a fairly decent job run blocking as well. Kendra Miller and Amari DiMarcato split carries. Imani Bailey didn't see the field, which is kind of frustrating. But if you look,
Trent Battle got a reception out of the backfield that went for 16 yards. That was awesome.
That was awesome.
I have no idea what that was.
Sure, man. Whatever. Very cool. But like, Kendrick ran the ball 16 times. He averaged 8.7 yards per attempt and 3.44 average yards after contact. So it's not a direct equation, but that's what, 5.3 yards before contact normally. So not terrible for the offensive line. Amari was 10.5 yards per attempt. Of course, he had that big long run, which he always seems to break a run right when I'm about to be like, why is Amari DiMarcato in the game? It's an uncanny ability.
Jamie told me that he and another person got, I think he texted us and they got in trouble for the, in the press box for talking about this. We were like, why is DiMarcato in there? And then he breaks off a 63 yard run. Also fun with statistics here. DiMarcato, 10.67 yards after contact on average per attempt. He had 64 total yards after contact. 63 was his long run. So he got hit a little bit on that first one and then broke it off. And so definitely inflates his totals there.
Yeah, otherwise he would have had 6 carries for a yard and a touchdown, which is always fun. That's my favorite NFL stat of all time. I think Jerome Bettis – had a game where he had 3 carries for 2 yards and 3 touchdowns, which is like just the most short yardage BS.
That is awesome.
So honestly, from the offensive line, I'm not completely dismayed outside of 74. I think they did a decent job. And look, SMU's defense is certainly not the most impressive TCU is going to face all year, but they gave Max time and Max held onto the ball a little bit too long and they didn't pick up a couple blitzes, but it wasn't the total drive ruiner that we have seen in the past. It's amazing what happens when you have an offensive line coach.
It's yes, and I think that TCU having four guys who are pretty good is like a huge upgrade from last year.
Yes,
like playing pretty good, and there's certainly that's going to be a work in progress. That offensive line is going to hurt us later this year, absolutely, against better teams, better defensive fronts than SMU, but it at least looks like it's taking a step forward. Which, I mean, the offense was pretty efficient last year with some really bad sequencing, some really bad play calling, and some really bad offensive line coaching. If they can just get a little bit of a floor raise there, I think that'll be better. We kind of tangentially touched on rushing. I think the only thing I'll point out is just saying out loud, Kendre Miller averaged 8.7 yards per attempt on 16 attempts.
He's like really good.
I don't understand it at all. I will say something. I'm going to say it, Grant. I don't know that there's any drop off to this team from losing Zach Evans. I don't know what they would be doing differently if they had Evans instead of Kendre Miller.
Evans, I think it probably gives you a little bit more big play potential, but down to down, Miller is an extremely good running back. I candidly did not see this coming. I tweeted this. I underrated Kendre Miller coming into the season. He is absolutely a weapon at running back. Absolutely.
Five runs of 10 more yards, 12 zone, four gap. So the gap, I only point that out because that's kind of that counter, that Lincoln Riley offense stuff that we see. We haven't seen that from TCU. TCU has been a zone team entirely. And so working that in a little bit, we see that Riley influence with Garrett. We see a little bit more versatility there. You have an offensive line that can at least block somewhat. And so you're able to run some more diverse running concepts. So it's not just inside zone 38 times a game. That's encouraging.
Yep. And I'll say one more nice thing about Kendre too. We have made light fun of him in the past for his blocking ability or lack thereof when it comes to the passing game. He didn't grade out very well. He got rocked, but he protected Max on one play.
If you get there was a blitzing linebacker, and your player doesn't make the tackle, I mean, you win, right? Like, that's all that matters.
He sacrificed his body, laid himself out there. Hats off. Well done.
Yeah, I totally agree. So good for him. Looking at receivers as well, yeah. I think pretty good distribution of targets. Six guys had more than one target, where 15 people caught a pass last week against Tarleton, which I think was the highest in more than 3 years for TCU. Yeah. You have, I can't count. 12?
Yeah.
12 guys catch pass this week.
No, sorry, 11, my bad. That's 11.
Six of them have more than one target. So again, distributing the ball pretty well.
This is a really interesting stat. The only receiver Max Duggan threw an incompletion to was Quentin Johnston. And he threw four.
Oh, that's wild.
I know. So I know there is a contingent, and you're not wrong, of TCU fans, and I'm probably one of them, that say, hey, we need to get the ball to QJ more. Get the ball to QJ, force it to QJ. That stat tells me they're trying. He got targeted seven times. He only had three catches. Every defense knows he's the best receiver on the roster. So I'm not ready to be mad about that yet. If it gets deeper into Big 12 play and we're still seeing this, then sure. But I'm not mad about that yet.
He only had one contested target. And... Hmm. He dropped two of his seven targets, and that third one was the contested one. The SMU player made a pretty good play, but I think he could have come down with it. I'm a little worried about his hands. I don't know if that's just early season being weird, but man, that seems like a little bit of a problem with QJ there. His average depth of target was 13. His yards per route run was below 0.91. So not very productive game despite being targeted seven times. Definitely something that if TCU's offense is going to improve, they're gonna have to figure out a way to get him more involved.
Yeah, so as much as TCU struggles to get QJ the ball downfield, can we also recognize that they use Darius Davis really well in the offense? Like, with all of Max's stats, that 80-yard pop pass counts for Max. That was all Darius. He might be the fastest man alive. I love watching him get maneuvered around the field and put into positions to succeed.
Yeah, might we be underrating Darius Davis's utility?
I think so.
He can do everything.
He can. He's an outstanding kick and punt returner. I mean, he put TCU into great field position. I don't know if you have those stats pulled up, but it has to be over the 50-yard line at least twice, I think.
I have TCU at almost 31 average starting field position, their own 31, which the average is like 22 or something. So very good there. It looks like their touchdown drives, they had two touchdown drives, one of 43 yards. And the second half, that one was 37 yards. And so I think those were both the interceptions. No, that was a kick return for Darius Davis in the first half. And then in the second half, that was the interception. So at least in the first half, he's pretty much responsible for a touchdown. I mean, he was responsible for a touchdown. He was also
responsible for a touchdown and field position.
Yeah.
Right. And then too, like, we talk about moving the ball around, but how fun is it? Jared Wiley caught a touchdown. Savion Williams, who I thought was off the daggum roster, had a touchdown. What the hell, man?
Williams, who adopting him into the family of fellow redheads. I'm taking that one. I don't want to talk about it. He is redhead. That's great. Yeah, love to see him getting involved. Three targets, man. Three catches, 14.7 yards per reception and a touchdown. And Jared Wiley, I don't think we talk enough about the fact that Jared Wiley is 6'7".
Yeah, he's huge.
I'm going to be delicate here for a second. Uh-huh. I think we talked up Jorquavius Spivey as a slot receiver, and I don't know that he's figured out how to get on the field as kind of that big tight end Gronk sort of a role. Jared Wiley is doing amazingly being an actual tight end filling in for that role there. What TCU, man, maybe Grant, let's be very charitable here. I'm going to be very charitable. Maybe TCU's offense doesn't work without Davis and Barber in the slot, and they can't figure out how to get Spivey into that equation. Wiley plays an amazing role in there. He blocks Grant. I mean, there's a couple times he had a seal off block that I think absolutely made the play. And he caught two passes, including that touchdown where he was just wide ass open.
Yep. Yep.
Which is crazy because he's so tall. You think defenders would key in on him.
He's very noticeable. And one other thing about the receiving core, I'll say that is nice. Gunnar Henderson, great catch. I believe for a first down that was very necessary. Had an ADOT of 8.3, caught all three balls thrown his way, averaged 10.3 yards per catch. What a nice surprise that is.
Yeah.
Get him in the slot. He's got a great pair of hands. Very happy to see him succeed. That's all good news there on my
end. That's rising tide lifts all boats, man.
Yes, for sure.
When you have Barber and Davis doing so well and you have Jared Wiley over there, it's like, oh, they're going to lose track of the shifty little dude in the middle. Gunnar Henderson, eat all that up, man. Eat it all. Yeah. That's great.
Yes. It's so much fun. Is there anything left on the offense we need to talk about before we go to the defense?
No. We haven't actually talked about the defense. I don't know. I guess we'll talk about like Tanner Mordecai as well. Did we explicitly talk about Max? I don't think we explicitly talked about Max.
We can, sure. Believe me, I will talk about Max until the cows come home. What do you want to talk about?
He is a better quarterback than he was last year.
Yes.
Just yes. Objectively.
He's throwing the ball over the middle of the field. He was 5 for 6 between 10 to 20 yards down the middle of the field.
Yep.
What the hell, man? Where was that? And I tweeted this, but if he's able to do that in 3 weeks under Dykes and Garrett Riley, really makes you wonder what on earth we were doing for the last 3 years when he could stand in the pocket on third down comfortably and wait for that route to get open and make the throw.
Yeah, you really got to ask how many millstones were being put around his neck, and then he was asked to swim the last couple of years. One thing I will notice that concerns me a little bit, this kind of comes full circle on our offensive line. Grant, if you look at the depth of target when Max is kept clean versus when he's pressured, obviously, okay, so big caveat, right? Obviously, you're going to be pressured more when it is your depth of target's longer because the routes take time to develop and you're looking downfield and there's more time, yada, yada. This is a huge split. 4.6 per average depth of target when he was kept clean, 15.7 average depth of target when he was under pressure. It seems like the offensive line did struggle a little bit when Max wanted to go long with sustaining their blocks for long enough to make that happen. But also, he held the ball a whole lot. 2.10 time to throw on that 4.6 ADOT, so he was checking down pretty well. But 3.2 time to throw when he was pressured. So looks like there might be a little, I don't know if that's his processing because there's middle of the field routes he hasn't been asked to make and do all that, or if that's the routes are slow developing. I don't know. But it does look like those longer routes are kind of inviting pressure. That being said, he did have 100% completion on three throws that he threw while he was pressured, eight dropbacks. So five times he scrambled or threw it away. But I mean, yeah, still very efficient. 88.9% completion overall.
Yeah, and I think, too, part of that is just those routes, it takes longer for someone to get downfield. I mean, if you look, deep passes 20 yards or more, that's 3.13 time to throw. Medium, which is 10 to 20 yards, is 3.08. And short, 0 to 9, that's 2.9. So a difference of only 0.23 seconds there. I don't know. I think Max just kind of holds on to the ball a little bit.
Yeah.
And like I said, it's probably because he's encouraged to throw, which has to be a new experience for him in his fourth year as a college quarterback.
And if we can find the line where it's like, hey, I want you to be empowered to make these deep throws, but also just take off and don't get sacked. That would be nice. Lovely. As well. TCU, 25% play action, that's up from last year, mm-hmm. but also screens are up from last year, 37.1. Grant, do you remember our episode with Seth Galina, what, like 2 years ago now? I was in Maine when we did that episode. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah.
Seth Galina talked about bullshit offenses. I want TCU to run a bullshit offense for Max Duggan. I want them to protect him. I want them to set him up for success. Play actions and screens where they matter. 100% completion on screens, 11.9 yards per attempt on screens. They were able to get out there. Grant, I love that because I saw multiple teams yesterday in the Big 12, especially TCU saw something on the edge, especially Kansas State, especially mm-hmm, Texas mm-hmm. Tech. I think that getting out there vertical might be a big advantage if TCU could do it. I would love to see Darius Davis outrun defenders. So I love that they're I know there's complaints about the screen, but again, this is the air raid offense. That's what you're going to get. And I think that they're working them really nicely to set up Duggan well.
And there's no better evidence of a bullshit offense than that 80-yard Darius Davis touchdown.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically, it's basically a middle screen, but it counts as a pop pass. It's beautiful. Parker, I'm going to start on the defense with a positive before I move to the negative. Abe Kamara. Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, the highest graded defensive player for TCU, had a pick, played 86 snaps, which I think is the second most of anyone on the team. D. Winters and THT both played 89, and Mark Perry played 88, so fourth. But, dude, talk about a complete found diamond in the rough. That's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah, absolutely. He's not – I wanted to make him a Monty Watkins, who's no longer with the team, who played running back one game last year, if you remember, because TC was so thin.
Yeah, I kind of do.
But different. Yeah, he's in there. I think he – I mean, he did absolutely great as well, playing in that slot role. And, targeted only three times. I mean, I think that's great. Like, you're lined up in the slot. You're denying the ball. That interception – just great. So, was very pleased with that. Was very pleased with Jamoi Hodge. Feel like he was all over.
Yep.
Three tackles, two assists, two pressures. Again, what am I asking Jamoi Hodge to do? Spill, right? I want him to fill in those gaps, and I want people to move out, and I want Winters and other guys to get those tackles. I was very, very happy with that.
Johnny Hodges. Yeah,
that's where
six tackles and a sack, man. And the sack was beautiful. It was designed perfect. Came straight downhill and got to Mordecai. Beautiful play. Six tackles. He wasn't asked to do a whole lot in coverage. He was targeted twice and gave up two catches. But, you know, only 9.5 yards per reception. Nothing big. So, yeah, very good by TCU's kind of linebacker duo there.
Johnny Hodges is the ideal linebacker.
He's what you want.
He is the perfect aesthetic. He is Bill Romanowski, except he's not a dick. Yeah, like, I mean, just, he's great. Also, Grant, I'm just going to say, we talk about bodies on this podcast. That's fine. I saw him from the silhouette, and my instant thought was, if I gave Johnny Hodges 6 months, could he power clean 500 pounds?
Yes, 100%. He's built like a brick small, house.
He's short enough, and he's so thick. He's got the base, dude. I think he'd be a very successful Olympic weightlifter. Holy cow.
Chad Banks had 12 snaps. I just love pointing out Chad's snap count because it doesn't make sense. Okay, Parker, let's talk a little bit about the negatives. I want TCU to bring more pressure. They rush three a lot, especially on third down. And Mordecai and SMU made him pay for it. If you're going to drop eight and still give up a completion to Rashi Rice, that's not good. I will say I tweeted, thank God, or I think I actually texted this to a friend group. Look what happens when they rush on third down. And it was when THT had that great tackle on third down. And then they proceeded to give up a 4th-and-10 completion that almost went for a touchdown. So not great. But I want Gillespie to be more aggressive with Hodge and Hodges and Winters. I think they can be.
My my grandfather, an American hero, Grant, used to say that prevent defense only prevents victory.
And is your grandfather my dad? That would be something. Anyway. I'm your uncle.
I'm laughing because there's like a weird Willie Nelson adaptation for the 21st century that's like, I'm my podcast host's grandpa. This is so dumb. We don't need to go any further.
Yeah.
Just that's very funny. So when TCU got pressure on Tanner Mordecai, he did not complete a pass. He did not.
Yeah.
0 for 4. That was only 6 of his 52 dropbacks, though. So that's not great. There was a trade-off with having rushing 3 and getting pressure. And there's also a trade-off of you have two stockier guys in Hodge and Hodges who might not be as able to cover. And the trade-off is in that they're not, they're not as good at getting to the quarterback when you send pressure. So they're less efficient rushers and they're less efficient in coverage. So you want an extra guy to help them. You're basically like, do I rush D Winters, who's maybe going to get to the quarterback, but potentially expose Hodge and Hodges, or do I rush one of Hodge and Hodges knowing that I'm just losing a guy in coverage and not getting the quarterback, or do I keep all three of them back and hopefully they can be a little redundant on each other and drop it? So like they didn't necessarily get burned when they dropped 8, but again, it allows the quarterback to develop and I love the defensive line for TCU. I think they're very fun. They're not great.
No.
We knew that going into the season. Dom Williams, I think, will be a great nose tackle by the time he's done here, but it's early. He's not great. We know Dylan Horton, very athletic, but we know what he is. And they're just not consistently generating pressure from a 3-down. And there's a weird trade-off with the linebacker core that TCU has right now. Grant, you know who would make that a lot better for you? You know who would ease a lot of your pain there?
Shad Banks?
No, Marcel Brooks.
I know. Who will be back for Oklahoma, from what I hear.
Who will be back for Oklahoma. So maybe there's some hope on the horizon. I think that Marcel Brooks is very fun from being able to be deployed strategically from multiple positions. But that's going to be substitution heavy. Oklahoma's going to run some tempo. We'll see how – we'll talk about that Wednesday. Let's table that. Let's come back to it. But I agree. The pressure was not there, and it was in – and that's a lot of time TCU got burned is – they didn't have pressure. They had one-on-ones on the corners, and SMU's big physical receivers engaged and either drew pass interference or broke in the middle on an option route and had a big play.
Yeah, and I think to be fair, that's probably the trade-off going from a 4-down to a 3-down, where you have one less man in pass rush at all times. Unless you run a 3-4 where you have that kind of edge guy in a 3-3-5 system, you're just not going to have that edge. So you're bringing 3 unless you're bringing pressure, and that's the trade-off, and you know that's fine. You mentioned the penalties. THT got called for pass interference 3 times on Rashi. Probably one of them was warranted. Maybe.
Yeah, he's got that little spider monkey thing where he's like littler on Rice and is always around him. And if they want to throw a flag, they can. I really felt like Rice was more interested in drawing contact.
Yes.
And which I think is hilarious. I think on Rice's touchdown, he was engaged with Tomlinson, made a motion, Tomlinson fell down, and then Rice went into the end zone and then caught the ball. It was like, how do you not call that if you're calling every time that Hodges has a hand on him? Like, what the heck?
Well, and this is the point where we're going to stop and bash ESPN for a minute. The worst camera crew I've ever seen for a game. unbelievable. So we never saw how Rashi got free. I don't know what happened. It's lost to history.
Not even I had some minor discrepancies with how they played the game. Like zooming in on a player's butt when the skit snap happens.
Like there was one, I think it was SMU on offense where like Mordecai handed it off and then they just kept the camera on Mordecai as the play develops like 10 yards downfield. Like what is happening?
Unreal. I'm begging anyone to let me see all of the players on the field. Just figure out a way. I don't care if it's Skycam that they do for like the playoff games in the Bulls. That's dope. Behind the quarterback, if it's all 22, whatever. Even if you zoom in, I understand they want to zoom in. Just at the beginning of the play, let me see where everyone is at least.
There was a play early in the game. SMU picked up a first down and got some decent yardage on a play where it's like it was probably a pick route, but they had a guy in the slot to the bottom of your screen, right? The guy that caught the ball, I did not know was on the field.
Yeah.
I had no idea he was lined up close to the hash marks, whatever. All of a sudden, this receiver pops out of nowhere, catches the ball, and picks up 15 yards. The worst camber work I've ever seen in my life.
Back to the football. Which kind of goes into we should talk more about the defense if we want to, but also, like, evidently SMU did not have their game day experience down. I heard reports of long lines and the play clocks were out and people couldn't get into the stadium. Like, just a complete mess, which is what you kind of expect. Like, I've been to the stadium. I'm familiar with the campus. I mean, it's not super streamlined and it's hard to park in Dallas regardless, let alone get, you know, 20,000 people in this one area. But it was kind of a mess all around.
I covered one game in SMU in that high school stadium, and I had to park like five blocks west in the middle of Highland Park and just walk.
Yeah.
I'm going to read a response from a listener here, CBFrog3. I'm just going to read his first sentence. Ford Stadium should be investigated for human rights violations, which I think is a really good distillation of what went down on Saturday. Incredible take. Thank you, CBFrog3.
That's very funny. That is very funny. So I think we can nitpick about the defense. I will say Rashi Rice was averaging over 4 yards per route run. This season, he only had 1.57. Again, that's just a productivity score. Basically, TCU held him to less than half of his season average. They didn't, you know, they really didn't get burned in any one aspect of the game. They did let SMU, like, 4th and 10, just, again, prevent miscommunication, not very sharp. I think they can clean that up. But in the down-to-down, you know, reality of this game, I think they really vastly outplayed a pretty good SMU offense.
Yeah, the only objective thing I'll say is that you have to add 45 yards to Rice's total because he picked up 45 yards on pass interference.
I don't know if that's replicable or whatever, but he definitely
it's not.
Got
I'm
it.
Just saying it happened. And, you know, and subjectively, it should not have on most of them, but those yards were gained.
Well, that would still get him. We're doing this live. He had 74 yards. So let's do 74 divided by 1.92. That's about 39 routes. No, 1.57. Darn it. 74 divided by 1.57. That's 47 routes. Holy cow. Mm-hmm. He's run a lot. And so if I add 45 to his 74 yards, 74 plus 45, can I get a drum roll?
It's 119.
Well, 2.5 yards per route run. So still way fewer than
his. Still
bad.
Okay. Yeah.
Still very bad.
Yeah. That's good to know. So this has been basic math, the Purple Theory podcast. But no, I just overall, the game was not as close as the final score indicated. I'm very happy TCU came away with the skillet. We're going to nitpick and listen, Oklahoma's coming to town on Saturday.
Yeah, if you want the what went wrong and what's going to go wrong the rest of the season, Oklahoma, yeah, that preview, we'll talk about that a lot.
They'll show you. But listen, you know, what was it, 42-34? Yep, we'll take it. If you told me before the game started, TCU's going to win this game 42-34, I would have shaken your hand and not bothered to watch a snap. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, again, we hit a big hurdle of the 2021-2022 season and the Dykes administration, which was win this game. And we're going to the great beyond. I don't know if TCU's going to make a bowl. I have thoughts about that, but we at least aren't in shambles. Which we would have been if we had lost SMU here. So I think that avoiding being in shambles is a positive thing. I think that's a good confidence building win. And this program is celebrating it. Sonny Dykes is buying coffee at the student union tomorrow for every student who wants to go get it to thank them for coming over to Dallas. Again, that's stuff that's just, I know Gary's done that, whatever. This administration has a good idea on how to capitalize on good vibes and perpetuate those good vibes, which almost feels illegal at TCU, but that's just because we've been conditioned to believe it is.
It's checking boxes. They're checking every box so far. And that's – I'm not even saying they're going above and beyond, but they're doing everything you want them to do. I'm not going to quote the seminal Trey Lewis song, Deed Down in Dallas, but just know I was thinking about doing so, and I taught myself out of it. There are a lot of Big 12 games I want to talk about, and I didn't get to watch a lot of them, but we need to start with Texas Tech, Texas.
Can I just tell you, did you watch this? Can I just tell you what happened? It's so good.
Yeah, I know, like, Bijan fumbled at the end, and
Texas
I know, like,
Tech
Texas
just went
up 34-31. Yeah, Like all the time, right? They just went
eight times. They were 6 for 8 on fourth down. Yeah. They weren't good. And they were just like, hey, we're just going to try it. And they converted 6 of them and extended drives. And then Texas just completely lost in the second half. They were destroying them in the first half, completely lost it. They looked tired. They were thin. And then Hudson Card runs this like perfect 2-minute drill. They get in field goal range. You think, oh God, okay, here we go. They tie it. And Bijan Robinson fumbles on the first play of overtime. And there's a Texas player, Grant, there's this still in the highlight. There's a Texas player right there who could have got it. It was just like a half second too late to recover it. Absolute comedy from Texas there. I mean, to the point, you sent me a message board clip today that was almost unbelievable.
Beautiful. It's beautiful. I love going to message boards. I went to Orange Bloods, but they're locked. So I went to Surly Horns, which is a world of its own.
Does Orange Bloods lock after a loss?
No, it's like you got to pay.
Oh, I see. I see.
Which Texags, even Texags doesn't do that. Steve Sarkisian's loss to Texas is not our standard. I'll censor this a little bit. I don't give a S, permaban me. That's the most unacceptable effing loss I've ever effing seen from the football team. Some responses. Fire the head coach in the DC and then promote Patterson to head coach. Make Fatterson head coach. Demote Sark to OC. Have to keep him on staff to prevent Arch from decommitting. Move PK, Pete Kwiatkowski, to defensive line assistant and search for a new defensive coordinator.
Oh, my God.
You know that meme where the guy with the big brain is playing chess against himself? That's also the brain? That's exactly what that comment is.
Yeah, that is just, I mean, I think I tweeted this about a Georgia Tech message board said Tommy Tuberville today, which, no comment. I will just say I thought of like the Office quote where Daryl is talking to Michael and he's like, dude, you have to get up every day knowing full well that you're going to be you. I couldn't do that. You're braver than me. And that's what I think about these message boards. Like, these dudes have lives. They have jobs. They probably have wives and kids. And they get this broken.
We record hour-long podcasts twice a week about a college football team. And both of us are like, boy, these people are insane.
Oh, my God. Just absurd. Very fun. Very fun there.
Can I ask a serious question?
Yeah.
Well, serious as a college football related, at least. Texas is like not Texas without Quinn Ewers. And he's like, they're going to be fine when Quinn comes back.
Maybe. I think they've got some big holes otherwise, dude.
I think when Quinn comes back, that's a different team. I honestly do.
Well, yeah, I think they're a step up at quarterback. Absolutely. But I'm not on the, oh, they would have beaten Alabama without Quinn Ewers, like with Quinn Ewers.
No, I don't think that's true either. But yeah. I'm saying they're like this Texas is going to be better than what they've shown.
Yes. From a very objective standpoint, people who are losing their minds right now are really not understanding what's going on. Or the fact that like their offensive line is not good and they recruited like 30 guys over the last 2 years that are all blue chips and they're going to be fine. Like,
yeah,
look. Maybe I'll eat curl on this and it'll be funny. That's fine. But like I have said, someone needs to come into Texas and say, shut up and let me win. Yeah. And Sark is doing it. It's going to be fine.
Yep.
Someone get my man some better sunglasses, though. Maybe I'll talk to Brennan Marion. Somebody's got to get Sark. I don't even know what these are, dude.
Parker's like hot, like legitimately angry about this.
These are an affront to good taste and decency. I don't understand. It's like the Neo from the Matrix sunglasses, except they're like big and thick and orange. It's the weirdest thing, man. They just don't look good. I don't know. Figure it out.
Also, shout out Joey McGuire. The best. I want him to – Hunter Cook tweeted this. I want him to adopt me. He just seems like just the best guy at Texas Tech. Just a perfect fit.
Love what he's doing. Love that he's amassing good talent, getting guys in there. They're fun. The vibes are great. The whole like after in the locker room, like you just can't help but like that guy, despite how annoying rando Texas Tech fans on the internet. I'm like, this is a very likable team. Donovan Smith, like I'm very happy to root for them to beat everyone except TCU. Like that's great. I will say while we're on Fashion Watch, because everyone else that I'm doing, Joey McGuire was wearing a hat that he like definitely picked up at a gas station on the way to the game.
Yes, for sure.
It was like a big patch frayed sort of thing. I don't know. It's just a choice. Me, an overweight 30-year-old, talking about fashion choices on the sidelines.
Do you know how many holes are in this shirt I'm currently wearing? And it's not like it's not like the designer version. The other big Big 12 game, well, I guess really there were two, but the one that was the funniest. Kansas State beats Oklahoma. I did watch most of the second half of this game live. We told you. We told you before the season.
Okay, and Chris Kleiman told us last week where he's like, we're not creating the chaos that we want. Adrian Martinez in chaos with Deuce Vaughn. You can't do anything about it. Oh, I mean, Kansas State like legitimately beat Oklahoma. That wasn't there was not like a fluke, whatever. Kansas State also legitimately tanked against Tulane and got caught so that they would beat Oklahoma. So we can have a whole conversation about whether that's worth it or not. But that's 100% what they did. They prepped for Oklahoma for 2 weeks. They had a plan. Adrian Martinez stones. On the road, the LED annoying light things are flickering, and he engineers two drives to put it away. Incredible. Incredible.
People are like, oh, like, well, don't get offended by the LED lights. I'm not offended. It's lame is what it is. Like, it just doesn't look good. It's not cool.
Good.
It's lame as hell.
You can't gaslight me into pretending that it's cool. Yeah.
It was really funny that the Kansas State punter was looking around like, hey, what the hell is this? I'm trying to get a snap, which I thought was comedic. But Adrian Martinez played out of his mind. Oklahoma's got some holes in that defense, and Kansas State exploited them, which is exactly what a Chris Kleiman team does. And now they're, you know, one of the best teams in the Big 12. So there you go.
Adrian Martinez, just want to read this final line here. 61.8% completion, 6.9 yards per attempt. 9.2 average depth of target. He was pressured 19 times, but he was sacked. Grant, he was sacked none.
Elusive.
He ran for 146 total yards, 6.6 yards per attempt, including scrambles.
Hell of a game. That's like, you know, Big 12 player of the week is often like, oh, who cares? But like, he was the best player in the conference this week.
That was a seminal moment in Big 12 history for the transfer quarterback. I mean, that's huge. That's just awesome. Good for him. That's great. It's funny when Oklahoma loses. Does kind of screw TCU because now we're playing at 11 a.m. again.
Yes.
But honestly, we're playing at 11 a.m. regardless. Who cares? Just very, very fun from Adrian Martinez and a legitimately very good game. Like Oklahoma went to the 2 minute drill and they marched down and scored. And you're like, dude, Adrian Martinez has got to do it again. And he did. It was great. He did it again. Incredible.
Yeah. The other game, which I think was on the same time as the TCU game, Baylor-Iowa State. Baylor comes away with a win there. You said it on Twitter, Parker, and I'll let you take this because I don't know much about this game. Iowa State's in disarray. They are – I know they're at the bottom of their development cycle, but they do not look like a team that is functioning particularly well.
Yeah, not good at all. They got stuck in the beginning of the game, which really benefits Baylor. Baylor got two pretty dumb penalties that extended and basically gave them a touchdown drive. Grant, they averaged like 3.6 yards per play on that first touchdown drive. I mean, they just got handed a TD there. And that puts you in a negative game script, which you just don't want to be against Dave Aranda. That's just generally not going to be very good for you. You look at how TCU won last year. You just don't let them get a lead. And they're just not very good. I think what we worried about was not having the Charlie Kolar bail out of jail free card on third down, not having anything underneath Xavier Hutchinson. Jirel Brock is good. He's evidently not as explosive as what they had. And Hunter Decker still is doing a little too much. I feel like the Chad guy from Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Paul Rudd's character, it's like, dude, do less. He just doesn't – he's young. I mean, he's not young. He's third year, but his first year starting and just doesn't have enough there. There's just so many pieces moving around in the Iowa State team. It really feels like they're a little bit away. They have some offensive line injuries. I'm really not impressed with Baylor either. I think that Iowa State looked very, very bad, and Baylor just – I mean, Baylor let him score at the end, and that was a lot closer than Baylor wanted it to be, and then maybe it should have been. I'm really not – especially seeing what BYU has done since playing them. I think both of those teams are – every team in the Big 12 is beatable. Absolutely. Yep. And Baylor and Iowa State are no exception. I do think Iowa State is in a real rough spot.
Can I tell you one team that is maybe beatable but has not been beaten?
It's
the Kansas Jayhawks.
MFN Jayhawks. Buddy, I cashed an over 2.5 like 3 weeks into the season. I love it.
They beat the hell out of Duke. Jalen Daniels, I said this on Statistically Speaking. We talked about this on Wednesday. Jalen Daniels is like a good quarterback. Kansas is a fine to good college football team right now.
They're real. They're real. They're a real team. Yep.
It's fun.
Huge.
It's just brilliant. I wish they
can
got
they do
more
it again.
Votes.
Can they do it again? I don't know. But I'm here for the ride. Who cares?
I'll watch. I'll absolutely watch. West Virginia also beat Virginia Tech on Thursday, which is candidly pretty sick. I did not see that coming, but good.
Hey, dude. they're awful at finishing drives. I mean, they kick field goal inside. They got penalties and stuff to extend it. And man, they were so bad at finishing drives. But the vision, like the West Virginia I wanted to believe in all along, there were drives where it was just like, yeah. Oh my yeah. gosh, Tony Mathis is good. Bryce Fort Wheaton is good. The offensive line is giving JT Daniels room to breathe. And yeah, weird year for the state of Virginia, though, between UVA James looking Madison. Real bad. James Madison being badass and DT in Virginia looking like, man, I don't know what we're gonna do here.
We're just off topic. Have you been to a game at Virginia Tech?
No.
I would love to go so bad. The Inner Sandman thing, I know it. People may think it's played out. It is awesome.
I bet it's super cool, especially like being in the student section. Those kids look so hype. I actually didn't like the way they handled it on the broadcast. Sometimes if you're like pumping something up too much, it kind of falls flat. And it really felt like on the broadcast, they just didn't have a good handle of what made it awesome. And so it was like very weird. Yeah. Like, and even, I mean, Virginia Tech had like an ex-player come out and say like, go Hokies or whatever. And the students started chanting Seven Nation Army while that was happening. Cause they were like, this is boring and we're hype. And then they did Enter Sandman. So I don't know, just a little weirdness there, but I mean, very cool to watch them with the flags and come out. And college football's great, man. College football's great.
It's very fun. We are
Louisiana Monroe beat the heck out of Louisiana. And there's like 19 people in the stands and a high school looking band. And they're playing All I Do Is Win for like 30 minutes after the game. That's awesome. That's great.
We're almost an hour in. This is our recap show. We normally don't go too long, but let's take just a quick tour around the country, if you don't mind, Parker. Clemson needed two overtimes to beat Wake Forest. I don't know what's going on there. Wake Forest is certainly good. Sam Hartman's a very good quarterback. That's not Clemson.
Counterpoint.
That's something different.
DJU woke up.
True.
Counterpoint. He looks like the guy we expected. Clemson's defense gave up 45 points in an overtime. Clemson scored 51. So. But yes, I agree. They're having some growing pains.
Sure, but it's also year whatever of Dabo. Those pains should not be present. The most puzzling result of the day, Middle Tennessee State, 45. Miami of Florida, mind you, 31.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I didn't keep much more than scorebook on this. Stock still knows what he's doing. Friggin' Cunningham, their quarterback, 91.3 QBR. Tyler Van Dyke just didn't. It just looked like they didn't show up, man. It looks like they may have some issues with. Again, you get guys, you get hype, you get Mario in there, and you face a little bit of adversity, and you know something goes wrong. It's hard to overcome that kind of deflation there. So pretty crazy result. I think that's probably one of the more bizarre results we'll see this season.
Yeah, and it started weird too because Middle Tennessee like kicked a field goal to start, pick six to Tyler Van Dyke. Miami got a field goal, and then Middle Tennessee had a 71-yard touchdown. So it's like big play, fluke play, field goal, and then Miami's down 17-13 into the first quarter, and the game was tied the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Just complete fluke, but very, very funny at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, you should be able to beat Middle Tennessee.
It would be good advice for you to beat Middle Tennessee State. Arkansas 21, Texas A&M 23. I watched all of this game, most of it on a phone at a wedding. Parker, I hate to do this to you. I felt so bad for that kicker. I'll just leave it there.
I saw an article today that was like the NFL dimensions of the field actually mean that would have been in a college stadium. I'm like, dude,
no, it's not what it was. It was.
I don't want to hear that shit.
The uprights would have been shorter if it was at a college field, which means it would have been a judgment call for the refs, which means that they may have counted it good. Which that's not the only field goal that hit the top, because Tulsa, Wyoming went to overtime. The exact same kick.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever seen that before.
I think you should get 5 points if you can doink it off the top. That's very impressive.
I think it should be worth one. Which, so they still want to win the game, but that is an accomplishment in and of itself. And then the other ranked game. Oh, yeah. Florida-Tennessee. Tennessee 38, Florida 33. Hendon Hooker, very good at playing quarterback.
Absolutely. Josh Heupel's got it cooking. It's funny. I mean, I just had seen in the this corner of the internet that I'm on a bunch of UCF people saying some absolutely terrible things about Heupel.
Well, you know, Stephen Godfrey had the best tweet about UCF. when he called it a degree farm for Hilton night managers. And he has since deleted that tweet, but it lives on in my memory. And I'm going to honor
close personal, I have some close personal friends who've gone to UCF. And you know, like, man, it is a commuter school. A lot of people don't finish their degree because enrollment's super hard. And there's like, you know, 70,000 students or something crazy. But
I'm only joking. I just love that tweet.
I will say, yeah, you don't even know what you got until it's gone. So Gus looks happy, also, though.
Sure. I'm sure he is. Are there any other games, anything else that struck your fancy before we sign off for the night?
Yeah, Colorado lost by freaking 28 to UCLA, who's not that great this year.
No, they stink. Colorado's the worst team, and they're like bottom five FBS.
I think they've got to be worst team ever. Let's go to CFBgrass.com, and let's just go to EPA per play margin. They are 129th.
Okay, so not where you want to be.
Holy cow. 129th. They're worse than Bowling Green, worse than Florida International, worse than Hawaii, worse than Colorado State, Akron, Louisiana Tech, Charlotte, Connecticut, Arizona State. I mean, they are apocalyptic.
Who's last right now? UMass?
This has to be wrong. Eastern Michigan? That's wrong.
Okay. I will say the stink bowl happened, Hawaii, New Mexico State, and Jerry Kill got his first win. So,
well,
congratulations.
Good for Jerry Kill. James Madison's sincere. Not showing up on the website. This is for a different thing. We should end this podcast. James Madison's not on there. That's weird. Anyway.
They're top 25.
They're very good. Yeah.
Go. Oh, they're like some type of dog, aren't they?
I think they're the Dukes. And it's a bulldog. It's a bulldog with a crown on it, which Dukes wear crowns.
The Duke of York, maybe? I know, because Old Dominion's the Monarchs, and I get it confused because it's like very
similar. That the noble Duke of York, he had 3,000 men. And he marched them up to the top of the hill, and then he marched them down again. You don't know that one?
No, you lost me there.
It's like a children's. This has been the purple rise.
This has been the Purple Theory podcast. I was about to quote. Richard the Third? What's Band of Brothers, St. Crispin's Day? I can't remember the Shakespeare, but it's one of the Henrys, Henry the Fourth. This has been the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGallard, and we landed this plane directly into the side of a mountain.
No one's still listening.
You can find me on Twitter, at Grant McGallard, spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. For the record, I did win the statistically speaking preview. I paid 9 out of 10 games. Kyle and Blinken both did 8. Go me. He's Parker Fleming. You can find him at Stats of War on CFBGrass.com and on the BetUS show, which is when?
Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 11 noon central. Noon central. Tuesdays, Wednesdays on YouTube. Go like, subscribe. If you listen to this podcast, I don't care if you go listen to the BetUS podcast. Just subscribe to it. It just helps. Thank you. That would be great. Also, Grant, I do have confirmation. We're going to have a code. I think on Wednesday's podcast, we're going to have a code where you listeners can go sign up to BetUS and get 125% match. So.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we'll get that out there and officially do all that. But BetUS on YouTube.
Perfect. Parker, hey, we got the iron skillet. Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.